right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again in the Amazing Race Zone. Dom, for the first time in over a year at this point, how are you doing?
And you say once again in the Amazing Race Zone. Before the draft that we did for the season, it had been a solid 5 years or something like that since we were previously in that zone. So I guess it's good to be back.
Yeah. The last podcast we did, as you mentioned, was our draft podcast, which we recorded on June 20th, 2018, back when the cast for this season was first leaked. And we were talking back then thinking that the season was like coming that fall or whatever, and it wouldn't take over a year to get back to the Amazing Race Zone. But here we are, and we are going to be breaking down the entirety, I guess, of Amazing Race Season 31 now that we've seen everything play out. A season that at least I, Dom, really enjoyed. Where were you just in general on the overall watchability of this season?
Yeah, coming that fall, many, many other things, but not The Amazing Race, as it turns out. So after a solid year of waiting, the season finally dropped and hit our screens. And by that point, it felt like almost an afterthought. I know that I forgot the season was ever coming down the pipeline until one day I started seeing the promos for The Amazing Race and realized, oh, wait, actually, this is a thing that exists and that we talked about, actually, a few months ago. So the usual excitement or momentum wasn't really there, I felt, but it was a fun season and easy to get into once I started watching the episodes.
Yeah, I really liked a lot of the teams that I didn't know that were the Amazing Race vets and was looking forward to seeing, obviously, plenty of the Survivor and Big Brother people again.
Well, and just on that, so what was your history with the Amazing Race? Because we've seen seasons here and there, but were any of these teams actually familiar to you at all?
Let me look through the list. I certainly did know the names, Colin and Christy, and I'm sure I watched their first season probably multiple times, but I don't have any kind of firm memories of their performance. The reason I remembered them primarily is back in like 2012-ish, we did an Amazing Race podcast during one of like Brendan and Rachel's seasons or something, maybe something like that. We did maybe even before that a podcast with a friend of ours from way back in the day, one of the OGs, Matt Rodriguez, and he mentioned Colin and Christy in really glowing terms a few times during the course of that podcast and said they were his favorite team of all time. And so I definitely remembered them mostly from that podcast, but I don't believe I knew any of the other teams. It has been a while for me to get back to the original question of just my history with The Amazing Race since I've been a regular viewer. For the first, I'm going to say 12 to 14 seasons or so, I watched pretty much every week and would occasionally rewatch seasons in between like rewatching seasons of Survivor and Big Brother, or just on loop in like 2008 through 2010 or so. But I, as I said, really ended up liking a lot of the teams that I didn't even know.
Yeah, so for me, there was this weird period of racking my brain over whether I had actually seen season 5 before, because I thought I had, and then I realized I couldn't tell you literally anything about it other than Colin and Christy and some of the other teams being on there. And I don't know if that's because I just picked up on that from a highlight reel at some point, or if I actually watched a season back in 2013 and have no recollection of it whatsoever. So the only team from The Amazing Races that I definitively have watched on my screen before is Art and JJ, and that wasn't that wasn't a useful landmark for very long. So
that was the season that we were covering, and I'm full disclosure, my notes for this episode is just the Amazing Race 31 Wikipedia, and I was only looking at the top of the placement as I was talking about the Amazing Race teams. But yes, I absolutely did know Art and JJ, and more on that later. But
So you're only realizing this now too, and so hopefully together we can just about piece together our collective memories of this entire franchise that we're now discussing again.
Hopefully the opening 10 minutes of this podcast is a non-elimination 10 minutes, because I am not off to the strongest start.
We are certainly in last, yelling at our cab driver right now. So for the Big Brother and Survivor teams, we were all familiar with all of them to some extent. And I think our experience watching this as people who primarily are Survivor fans and who former jilted Big Brother fans, but still flirt with coming back to it at some point. And then I would say I'm an Amazing Race fan, but I'm not a fan. I don't watch. I couldn't recite all the statistics. I don't listen to all the podcasts about it. So it's just like there in my life in like an ambient sense, but I don't really care about it that much. So coming to this from that perspective, I was, I guess, more invested in the Survivor teams, or a Survivor team, I'll say. And so it's nice to have this ambitious crossover event, if you like, to have all of these people that I vaguely recognize for this semi All-Star season. But it wasn't like a Big Brother All-Stars or a Survivor All-Stars or even, I guess, an Amazing Race All-Stars where you have all of these teams that you really know and love. So at best, you're going to care strongly about a third of them and then maybe one or two from the other franchises. But everyone's just kind of like dipping their toes in the pool. They're not heavily invested one way or the other. And I wonder if that's different for the hardcore Amazing Race fans for whom this is a much anticipated season of their favorite show, and for whom having these outsiders from Big Brother and Survivor come in is a totally different experience.
Yeah, I would be interested to hear that kind of perspective for sure. To quickly go back to something that I was kind of surprised by, and it makes me wonder as well, how many times, if ever, I watched season 5 is Colin and Christy seem like a team that for me would stand out in the pantheon of reality TV history just by virtue of him being the only Colin ever to appear on CBS reality, as far as I know, right? It seems like I would remember, as a fellow Colin myself, way more about this guy and this team in general, and I know plenty of time has passed, but I when they showed up, I had no clue what to look, what to expect in terms of even just what they looked like. I had no memory. I couldn't even conjure up an image of this guy, Colin, from Colin and Christy in the back of my mind.
It would startle me if that had been the only Colin across 30 seasons of The Amazing Race and then Big Brother and Survivor and so on. But I think you are actually right. There aren't any others that jump to mind. So that's not, I guess back in the day, it was kind of a dodgy pantheon to be in. But now, I mean, it's, you have a really high standard to live up to. So,
well, not only that, because, and this is why I would expect myself to remember more. There was a guy named Colin on one of the super early seasons of The Challenge, and I only ever saw him on that one season, but he won the season, and I can still remember what that guy looks like.
Sure, and with this Colin, with I don't even know what his last name is, but he's not Colin Woods, as he would yell at Chrissy over and over again. But yeah, it's been 15 years since his last appearance, so even if he is recognizably the same person, it might not be recognizably if you haven't seen him in the past 15 years and, you know, he right. Looks like a silver fox now. He's a totally different guy.
Yeah. So, and incidentally, every Colin that I'm aware of who has appeared on reality TV is a champion now. So I guess the pressure's on.
Well, there are always exceptions to prove the rule, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy Collins also in the mix as well. It's a high standard to live up to. But, Dom, let's get into one thing that, in terms of just kind of season overall, I know became kind of a storyline that I don't think we even really touched on. We talked about veterans obviously having an advantage when we were previewing this season, but I don't think we fully comprehended just what kind of an advantage that would be. And one thing I've heard a lot of people talk about is how just kind of unfair this was to the Survivor and Big Brother alumni to put them in this spot where it seems like, as far as I could tell, really only Nicole and Victor had any kind of meaningful equity to do well.
Yeah, although how much of that do you think is due to the composition of the team? So first of all, you have 5 Amazing Race teams against 3 for each of the other 2 shows. So that's still a fairly even playing field just right off the bat. And then also you look at those Amazing Race teams. These are historically good teams in the Amazing Race. They're not just random teams plucked from obscurity. I guess Art and JJ are going back to obscurity now. So,
but they, I mean, Art and JJ were absolute monsters their first time around.
Right, so even them as the weak link that you would think based on this season, they had a great time in their first run. Colin and Chrissy, historically good just based on season 5, and now you see them complete that amazing redemption arc here again. Tyler and Corey, historically good racers. Leo and Jamal, very good. So I guess team fun too, not shabby either. So yeah, if it was random teams from across the span of Amazing Race up against these seemingly random teams from Big Brother and Survivor. That would be one thing where the Amazing Racers would still have an advantage just with that experience and that know-how and so on. But this feels like stacking the deck almost. You have these people from the other shows there to draw their fans in, but the teams themselves feel like lambs at the slaughter. There wasn't really any chance of them taking it home.
Right. I am with that. So let's go through how all of this went down, and obviously feel free to jump wherever, but because I'm just using Wikipedia as my notes for how all of this played out, I am going to be going in reverse order of finish, roughly, in terms of how we talk through these teams. So let's begin with our winners here, Colin and Christy. Dom, I don't know if you even remember this, but I have pulled up the draft order that in which we selected over a year ago at this point, and with the number one overall pick, you immediately took Colin and Christy. I don't know how you managed to pull that off, but even before the season had finished filming, even potentially before it had begun filming, I think we found out the cast fairly quickly, like when they left, you were somehow spoiled, so defend yourself.
So trying to put myself in that mindset from a year ago, I imagine I made that pick solely to deprive you of the pleasure of choosing a Colin, or to give myself the unique experience of being able to root for a Colin, more so than any Amazing Race prowess I could dredge up from my memory from 10 years ago. But yeah, great call on my part. Really crushing it here.
Yeah, a real crystal ball moment for you there. And then just for the record, with the number two pick, I had said I would have taken Colin and Christy if they had fallen, but instead I felt great about taking Art and JJ.
Art and JJ. A perfect symmetry. Yeah,
so our top two picks were the winners and the eventual first boots there. But the big story with Colin and Christy, as far as I have been able to tell, has been just the redemption arc, I guess, from their story in season five, where Colin in particular was maybe a bit of a hothead from time to time. And now this time around, they've embraced like that real Zen vibe. Did this resonate with you as someone who only really remembers them from this time around? Or was that something you would have not picked up on had you not heard so many people talking and tweeting about it?
Oh, I definitely would have picked up on it, because if you remember the two of them at all for any reason, it is because of those arguments, and that they're one of those teams which is dysfunctional in a way that seems to contribute to their success for some ineligible reason. So that is the impression that stays in your mind. So to see the two of them go like full Marianne Williamson was it was an interesting transformation.
Topical, Dom. Way to work you in the Marianne reference for like the 2 weeks where she's going to be at the top of the news.
Yeah, got to date this podcast officially. But it felt like almost too much at times. Like when the Riley sisters had that argument with Nick and Vic on the train, and then Colin and Chrissy were like holding this prayer circle or whatever. That felt like this is part of a long con, right? When everyone else closes their eyes, they're going to turn to the cameras and wink, and then the ruse will be up. But no, it felt like it was sincere, but also part of a conscious external transformation that they were trying to sell to the audience. So I think it is a little from column A and then a little from column B.
They would show highlights of their time in season five. The one that really stands out is Colin yelling at the ox or whatever it was. What was it?
My ox is broken, which you could tell the producers were on pain of death. They were going to force Colin and Christy to recreate that at some point. So there is an element of like, say the line, Bart. And then Colin dutifully said, my is broken over and over again. Gave them what they wanted. And I guess they were handsomely rewarded for that. So can't complain for that. That's SponCon too much.
Right. Well, what I mean is I certainly would have gathered that they had changed as people over the course of 15 years pretty substantially, and that Colin in particular was really making like a concerted effort to stay more balanced and focused this time around or whatever. But I even seeing these kind of highlights from back in the day make the TV episodes, I still feel like I don't have a full appreciation for what kind of a drastic transformation that potentially was.
And is that transformation encouraging or heartwarming to you? I guess you aren't the kind of person for whom things are heartwarming by and large, but was it
how dare you
are we meant to take a positive message away from that, do you think? Because my reservation about all of this is that it's great that he transformed and that he and Chrissy as a unit have been able to repair that relationship and have it evolve and become something that really has flourished over the course of a decade and a half. But if you go back to the Colin and Chrissy that we saw in season 5, I would think most outside observers would say these two just don't work. It's toxic. They need to break up for their own respective sanities. And so it's nice that, yeah, that's what a lot of people were saying. And you hear the usual things that the teams who raced with them said, actually, those were small moments in a very stressful portion of a long experience. And when the cameras were off or most of the time, they seemed perfectly happy and functional and polite to each other and to us. But, you know, it's the old thing of, right, if you don't do it, they can't show it. And then also, everyone loves to complain about their own edit. And Colin and Chrissy certainly were, based on people who spoke to them back then. But that, I think that there definitely is an element of truth to it. And so when you see something that from the outside doesn't seem like it should work, and the sensible response would be to either call it quits or at least take a break and strongly reevaluate where we both are in our lives, for that to continue and work out, does it feel like they just, you know, they spiked the lucky card on the river, or was this part of a conscious transformation and plan that you could have seen coming? Because I worry about people who, not that anyone really is or should be taking relationship advice from The Amazing Race, but this is an archetype that you see so often on this show, right? It's this these bickering couples who, based on what you see of them on the screen, you have no idea what they even saw in each other or how they're still together or what brought them to this point in their lives, where it seems like they're causing this symbiotic misery, as our boy Matt Graham would put it, to each other. And I think the race is designed to make that stress come out and accentuate it a lot more. And you see so often these teams get into fights where they're just like keeping score over, well, you failed at this and you took the wrong turning here and you mess up this U-turn, so now you shouldn't, you know, I don't need to listen to you anymore. And it's very easy for it to encourage those kind of dynamics. But even with all that in mind, it seemed like Colin and Chrissy were not in a good space. And so I'm glad that they are now, but it feels like they should never have been able to get there, if that makes sense.
So I don't remember nearly enough about what they were like the first time around on the race, but to just comment on the bickering couple in general, at least in my experience on The Amazing Race, and just with reality TV overall, I am extraordinarily reluctant to ever pass any meaningful amount of judgment on any person or couple or whatever it is, especially in these super high stress, intense situations, arguing on TV in a heavily edited context. I would imagine there are very few teams on The Amazing Race that, if you were inclined to present them in a certain light, you would not be able to find some unflattering footage of them looking like two people who could never conceivably get along. And again, I don't remember enough about Colin and Chrissy. Perhaps on season 5 it was like extraordinarily toxic or whatever and beyond, at least in the minds of the people watching, any sort of repair. But I think the moral of the story is that one should not be rushing to judgment in seeing how drastically it seems Colin and Chrissy and people like them can change and stay together and at least on the surface become immensely more positive people over the course of time. I would use this as an opportunity to, as I often try to do, encourage reality TV fans not to be judging these people too harshly based on a heavily edited final product.
I would agree with that, although maybe less so or more so depending on your stance with The Amazing Race. A lot of the interest in these shows is about what it says about the people involved and the lessons maybe that you can take into life outside of the show. Because if you're just looking at people trying to stack dishes in a remote part of Vietnam or something, if you frame it in those terms, it's not that interesting. But if you think about what they have to do to get there and how they decide on who's going to run that leg and how encouraging they are to each other when one of them succeeds or fails and so on. That's the stuff. That's the real meat that you can discuss and chew over on top of just watching to see the pretty landscapes that they go past en route to their next destination. Right. So I think there is always going to be something to talk about with these things. And yeah, I agree with your point that if you wanted to show Nick and Vic's relationship in the worst possible light, I'm sure there is material on the cutting room floor that you exactly. could use to do that. But it's weird with this show that it feels like the most successful couples are often the most dysfunctional ones, or at least the most overtly dysfunctional ones. So I remember Rachel and Dave, for instance, from this Rachel's, one of her first seasons, where every episode I would be just wincing watching them on my screen and how just aggressive and negative they seem to be to each other. And then they would finish and they would just finish first again and get some amazing vacation for two for 7 days in Aruba or something, where hopefully they would not be arguing and be able to actually relax and enjoy themselves for a change. But there's this pattern where the more they fight, the more they seem to win. And that goes for a lot of the couples on the show. And I know that in general, there is this thing where it is better to have those arguments and be able to fight if it's constructive than to never do that and to bottle it up and to just have that tension simmering inside until it all boils over. But it feels like this takes it to the extreme where the less constructive you are, the more impressive or successful you are. And I'm not quite sure how to interpret that.
I'm sure we could also probably find instances of couples not doing well despite their bickering, but I do think there may actually be something to couples fighting, at least in the cases of, as you mentioned, like Major Dave and Rachel, or Colin and Christy, probably both times around for them, where because they're kind of just going at it so intensely, it generally means at least one of them is really focused on doing well at the task at hand. And that may almost be weirdly like an upper hand there compared to a tendency that certainly not every other type of couple falls into. But I do think for a lot of other pairs that have a easier time getting along more often than not, there can also be a tendency to get down in the dumps simultaneously more often than not. And I think that is often disaster.
I hadn't thought about that angle, that if one person is going into this tailspin, then if the two people are on the same page, and the other one probably is as well, then that's not a good thing for the team. So yeah, that actually makes sense now that I think about it. But there's
so
also...
actually, Dom, you want to have a partner that you're fighting with all the time, and that's why we're such a perfect team.
Exactly. But there is also the point that because it is a TV show, they're going to focus on the kind of relationship drama or dysfunction that plays well, or I guess plays badly, depending on how you see it, on TV, where it's constantly screaming at each other or having these big blow-up arguments, as opposed to just keeping it all inside and never voicing it, or passive-aggressively, there we go, sniping at your partner, which is not constructive, Colin, and not healthy, and no one should ever do that. Or just these other forms of poor interaction in relationships, which are equally as unhealthy a lot of the time, but maybe don't jump out as such on TV.
Yeah. So one thing I was curious to hear your take on was just the way the show is edited, and potentially if you got any kind of like winner edit vibes, either correctly or incorrectly, along the way, or were even thinking about that sort of thing this time watching The Amazing Race.
Yeah, and just as a final point on the Colin and Christy thing, they actually did this interesting long-form interview with Dalton Ross about that journey over the past 15 years. So I will remember, hopefully, to link that in the show notes this time. But if I don't, Google it, seek it out, because that does make for a really interesting read. But I hadn't thought about the editing of The Amazing Race too much. And part of that is I just don't keep up with the show too often, so it's hard to care about the edit of a show that you don't really watch. But did it strike you as noticeably different from the seasons that you were watching years and years ago?
I wasn't paying nearly as much attention to the edit as just a general concept back when I was a big time Amazing Race fan back in the day. The major editing takeaway I had, and I know that there's nothing they can do about this, but this is also something that really bothers me on The Challenge, MTV's The Challenge as well, is I hate knowing that people are giving their commentary on an event to which they already know the outcome. And this, I definitely got it wrong plenty of times too. Like, I was convinced in the Rachel and Alyssa boot episode, Rachel had some confessional early on where I knew she knew how this leg was going to play out, and she just seemed way too cocky to ever be leaving that week. So I thought she was like lock safe, and I was dead wrong. And this backfires plenty, but it still always just messes with me, and I hate it knowing that people are talking about events where they know how everything plays out.
Yeah, for the same reason that I don't care what your opinions are on a show if you are spoiled, and I know that you're spoiled, and you admit to being spoiled, but you pretend like you can still have an objective discussion anyway. If I'm watching a confessional on a show, I want it to be a reflection of someone's true thoughts and feelings at the time, and not be sitting there trying to pass or read the tea leaves of exactly, okay, so they seem a little more chipper than usual, and right, they're wearing this outfit at this time, and you can see the angle of the sun going here, so that must mean they weren't eliminated on this task, because it's just nonsense. I don't want to do any of that. I want to just be able to sit back and take things at face value, which seems like a lot to ask for these days.
So, and this is such a minor nitpick that it's just going to come across as super annoying, but I have to say it now that this has come up. In the finale, it was very clear who was going to switch to the memorize the knowledge, the cabbie thing, because half of them were wearing hats that went to the rowing task first.
The knowledge. Yeah, it's I liked the English leg of that task, by the way. The rest of it I could take or leave, but I'm very glad that the home countries, my home country got well represented there.
Oh, actually, to also date this podcast, congratulations to the U.S. women's national team on defeating England yesterday and moving on to the World Cup finals.
Yeah, I would make a joke about no one actually caring about women's soccer, but that would get me officially cancelled. So
people do care about women's soccer here. It's way more popular than men's soccer.
Okay, people care about women's soccer in the U.S. because the U.S. is incredible at women's soccer. You have the best team on the planet, probably. So that does help. You know, I don't know if that interest extends to, like, I don't know, some random Eastern country where they just about sneak into the league every season.
I don't know if we have the best team on the planet just yet, Dom. I'm not going to count those chickens, but we're definitely better than England. Anyway, any further thoughts on the edit or any related issues?
None to speak of, really. I did find it interesting that among the fans who did keep up with the season, it felt like the Survivor and Big Brother fans who watched The Amazing Race because, hey, it's a good show, and also I now recognize some of the people on it, they seem to enjoy it a lot more than the longtime Amazing Race fans did, who, obviously, if you're comparing it to all of the previous 30 seasons that you've seen, the bar will be considerably higher. But when it comes to the quality of the challenges or the edit or the pacing of the show or some of these other things, that it felt like they were more dissatisfied than the people who were coming to it with maybe a less critical eye.
I mean, as a filthy casual who really was there for seeing how the Survivor and Big Brother people did, and, you know, hand up, full disclosure, will probably not be tuning into The Amazing Race. Maybe I'll watch it again, but until they do another potential iteration of this sort of thing, I don't see myself, like, going into next season being like super hyped to see how everything goes between a bunch of people I've never seen before. I would honestly say, though, that this was my favorite season that I've ever watched of The Amazing Race because I had that background knowledge on so many of the people.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I enjoyed it more because Eliza and Corinne were on my screen for a few episodes, or supposedly Janelle was on the season, but you wouldn't know that to watch it. I think just I like the basic premise of The Amazing Race, and I know that people complain that it ran dry a little bit after 30 seasons where you've actually been to a lot of these locations already in the past. So you have the Survivor issue of, well, okay, if we remain in Fiji for 8 seasons, that starts to wear after a while. The Amazing Race is the entire premise of the show, so if you end up repeating those locations, then that is a serious problem. But I don't know. I enjoyed it, and maybe that would change if I watched for the next 4 years and started to get bored. But for now, my short and uneducated attention span is liking what I'm seeing.
Yeah, I don't Now I feel like I should watch the next season just out of respect for how much I enjoyed this season. Because every season, honestly, of The Amazing Race that I've watched, I have found to be pretty interesting, and it may have just been because I had watched so many back to back to back and just kind of gotten over the novelty of it that I fell just. I don't want to say out of love, but that I just lost interest, I suppose. But I'm at least open to the possibility of continuing to be an Amazing Race viewer here.
Yeah, I would say that too. However, I'm wary of the precedent that I set with the challenge where I declared on air that I was a fan and then never saw another episode again. And that was in the middle of the season. So
your history with the challenge was unbelievable, where you ignored it for 6 years or so. Watched 10 episodes in one day, did a podcast about it, and never watched again.
I'm down to do that with a lot of shows, frankly. I think that's the way to go most of the time.
Yeah, that's not a bad plan. So I'm sure there will be more on potentially Colin and Christy that comes up along the way, or just kind of general things about the season overall. But we should hit on some of these other teams and I want to get into next the people that emerged as my clear favorites by the time the finale rolled around, and that I know were really popular with a lot of the fan base, if not literally everyone. I don't know if I've heard anyone say a bad word about Tyler and Corey. So Dom, here's your chance to tell me why you hate Tyler and Corey.
I like them a lot. I'm sure there are people out there, though, who, because they are YouTube personalities, if you take a gander at the comment section, I'm sure there would be stuff that you wish you hadn't seen.
That may be a possibility, Dom, but did you know of them as YouTubers? Were either of these guys familiar to you as a Gen Zer?
They were not, sadly. And the history of reality TV self-proclaimed YouTube stars is not a positive one, so I didn't come in with too high expectations, but I heard they were good on their first season, and based on their performance here, I'm certainly willing to believe it.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think I, before the draft, looked up the Amazing Race veteran team's results from their first time around, and as I mentioned, I took Art and JJ with my first pick, but with my second pick, I took Tyler and Corey. And more broadly, by the way, now in looking down this list, even though you nailed the winner with the number one overall pick, I still feel like I nailed the spirit of the draft. I spent my first four picks on the other Amazing Race teams that I'd never heard of.
Okay, and I picked the one that won the season, so scoreboard, yeah. But yeah, if you look at the results for this season, Tyler and Corey, they got off to a little bit of a shaky start, actually, but once they found their stride, their finishes in consecutive legs were first, 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 second, 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 which if you flip that last second into a first, looks like a historically dominant performance.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say they got off to a shaky start. They had one bad leg early on, but otherwise we're always in the top half of the pack as far as I can tell by this list.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, their first season they finished first on five legs and second on a handful more, so their just sheer consistency is something that's really impressive.
Yeah, and just so much fun along the way. They are the perfect example of a pair that the editors can probably try as hard as they want, and it's going to be difficult to make them look like there's much animosity going on during these legs.
Yeah, here's a question that I find fascinating about the two of them, and which I've shamelessly stolen from someone else that I spoke to about the season. But do you think there's any, and you really can't tell about it at all, so that's I guess a good sign, but do you think there is any resentment within that team that one of them has all of this fame and fortune and the other one is effectively there for the ride just as a sidekick helping them out?
So I have no idea which one is which. I did not know that was the dynamic at all.
Right, and that's a good thing, right? If you can't tell, then that suggests a level of I guess equality in that partnership, even if their actual roles in terms of their careers are much different.
And speaking of not knowing which one is which, I did not know which one was Tyler and which one was Corey until the finale.
Also true. Yeah, I feel that.
I'm still not 100% on which one's Leo and which one's Jamal.
Yeah, can you tell which one was Colin and which was Christy?
I got that one down, but it took a couple weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. So really, really enjoyed. By the way, which one is the mega famous one?
I want to say it's. Okay. Well,
really convincing answer here.
Look, I'm on the Wikipedia page. Taro is the one that has his own Wikipedia page, and Corey isn't. So I feel like that answers the question pretty well. But it strikes me too that for the people who had never seen Big Brother before, I'm not sure they would be able to tell you which one was Janelle and which one was Brittany.
Yeah, I would imagine not. My only gripe, by the way, with Tyler and Corey, and thank God I did not notice this until there were only like a couple of weeks left, but as much as I love their aesthetic, the all black, I love the hat and band, the neckerchief kind of look, their black tank tops are different brands. They look identical but have different logos on them. What is going on?
That is another one of those things that only you would pick up on or care about, and I love that you care about it as strong as you do to make up for that.
Oh, it's just so glaring. It's all you can see.
I mean, it's all that you can see.
Yeah. Anyway, a lot of fun with Tyler and Corey this time around. What are they YouTube about?
I don't know. Just what does anyone YouTube
you're
about? Makeup, drama.
You're our voice of the youth here, Dom.
Why?
Because I'm in my 30s now.
I'm 26. My life is already on that downhill trajectory.
Oh, come on.
I've had my midlife crisis, and I'm now trying to figure things out again.
I mean, you were 40 years old when you were born.
Yeah, I'm an old soul, but I know a lot of people say that.
Yeah. All right. So, and incidentally, the showdown between Tyler and Corey and Colin and Christy, while it probably would have been cooler if they were doing something other than setting up a drum kit, I thought was really well executed with the Seven Nation Army kind of montage. And Dom, get your passive aggressive comments ready, because it reminded me a lot of The Genius, like actually using music from pop culture, I think is really effective.
Yeah, no one would ever have that idea to use music that people had heard before. That's everything needs to have an original soundtrack until The Amazing Race came along.
Dom, but I think Survivor, for instance, does a really good job with their own original soundtrack, but there is something to having a song with lyrics or a song that people have some sort of attachment to build up the emotional impact of a scene.
A song with lyrics. That is just revolutionary, honestly.
Do any of the Survivor songs have lyrics?
No, but there are shows other than Survivor, just like there are shows other than The Genius.
Does The Amazing Race or Big Brother ever have songs with lyrics?
Well, I'm not chasing you down this rabbit hole any further.
Okay.
This
is, I think it's a fantastic point, and I made it really well.
You do you, Colin. You do you.
All right. Let's get into our third place finishers here.
Well, hold on. Let's dwell on that challenge quickly, because it felt just kind of out of the blue, right? Like if this is meant to be the big finale that the entire race has been building towards, and that would make sense if you were chasing around London, going around all of these famous landmarks or whatever. But instead, after that, we come back to Detroit so that we can build a drum kit. I'm not sure where the big finish was meant to be here.
I felt horrible for them as they were building the drum kit, because I myself used to play drums in high school, and anyone who played drums would have had an enormous advantage in that challenge. Like, I could not fault them for a second for getting either the snare being down or the cymbal being too tight wrong, when if you've never played drums and don't understand why that's an enormous difference maker, you would have no way of ever seeing that coming. And I think it really honestly detracted a lot for me having this be the final challenge, and having the snare down or the cymbal too tight be the thing that was getting them rejected over and over and over and over, and having $1 million hinge on the randomest details that no one who isn't very familiar with that sort of thing would ever have any reason to believe even existed as a factor.
And it's not a clearly visible detail either. So if you think back to that that challenge where they had to go around the lake on the boat while memorizing the poem, and then they would go to the poetry guy and recite it, and a lot of teams would get the same tiny thing wrong over and over again until they realized what was happening. At least with that, you're kicking yourself once you figure out that you said could instead of can or vice versa or whatever it was. But you at least recognize that you made a mistake. Whereas with this challenge, if the screw is slightly too tight or it's just about not tight enough, how are you even meant to recognize what your own mistake is? It's like right. You just keep doing things at random until you get the thumbs up and get to move on to the next task.
I mean, as we saw, Colin eventually noticed that the snare was up on the demo, and then Tyler and Corey didn't ever figure it out until they had Colin and Christie's to look at and figure out what was different, noticeably different. And that's how they ended up solving it and almost overtake. I don't even know how close it ended up being, but I thought it was really disappointing, honestly, to have the finale come down to a challenge that kind of fickle and random.
Right. And according to someone who was there watching part of the final episode filming, there was about an hour gap between Colin and Christie leaving and Tyler and Corey leaving. So,
really
no suspense over the eventual outcome. But I did love that. As Tyler and Corey were just on their way to the final challenge, they were just like, hey, love you, thank you for everything, just before that final stretch, you know, just put a close to the whole race. But for me, that wasn't even the most offensive task in the finale, because I hated the whole bank vault thing, where that also seemed, it's not random in the same way, but it's like, once you're down there, you've done the skill-intensive part of the challenge. You've rappel down the building. And to be fair, that's not even that skill intensive. You just look at the window and memorize a number and you move on. And there are four numbers, so there's no real exertion going on here. But once it got down to the vault, it didn't seem like it was, I'm better at opening a vault than you are. I've figured out the task. I've had this eureka moment that's going to win me $1 million. It's, I'm just going to turn the wheel and follow these unnecessarily complicated instructions. And if my thing just happens to click into place in the right way, then I get this massive lead and there's nothing you can do about it.
I don't think that's exactly how it went down. It seemed like, I'm going to go with Leo was the one down there just not fully reading the first instruction. And it was yet another just kind of attention to detail challenge. And I agree with you that that's super anticlimactic on the heels of we've just scaled this building. And now that's all going to be irrelevant because he has a hard time with this lock. But it seemed to me at least like the safe thing had virtually nothing to do with randomness. If they were all equally competent at reading the instructions, they would all get out of there in the same amount of time.
I don't know if that's true, but even if it is, reading instructions is not a basis for an interesting challenge. If I give you an instruction manual and you know you're just following it, and it's not even like there's a skill intensive part to that. It's not you have to assemble this complicated piece of machinery in just the right way. Is you turn this knob 5 times and you turn this dial 2 times. Where's the beef? Where's the excitement in any of that?
It's not necessarily that it's exciting, but it opens the door, I suppose, for this sort of thing to go wrong. And I think they like the idea of it ending in a giant vault opening to get the next clue. And this is the route they ended up going there. And I have a pretty hard time, honestly, faulting the producers anytime. Someone reading the clue incorrectly is a major issue. Like, I can't believe, even on a season full of people who've been on reality TV, if not this exact show before, how frequently we were seeing people understand that the exact phrasing or exact instructions often are an enormous difference maker, and people were still just reading the clues so casually.
Right, but this is like, no one thinks that Siri not reading the fine print is interesting, right? Like those kind of technicalities just are not what makes good TV. So if they read the rules correctly and they open the door at about the same time, nothing has happened. The game has not changed at all. And if one of them falls behind because they didn't read a clue, that is so much less interesting than them falling behind for literally any other reason.
That's true. But I think less the exact verbiage in clues. I agree, people getting that kind of thing wrong or overlooking minor details is not the most compelling TV. But to me, it's essentially the same thing as Colin and Christie, I think that was who did it, leaving their gnome behind somewhere or had a, yet another team fun cracking an egg, that sort of thing. It seems like essentially in the same kind of spirit as that to me, and I do think that's fine.
Okay, it's fine. That's high praise coming from Colin. You know, it's
yeah,
not damning it with faint praise at all. It's really really picking it up.
Not as bad as you're making it sound, is all I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, in looking at this Wikipedia page, Tyler and Corey are listed as best friends. Art and JJ are listed as best friends. Everyone else is just friends.
Acquaintances. They know who each other are. They are not strangers.
Yeah. Well, Leo and Jamal, I just found out, are not friends. They are cousins. Did you know they were cousins?
I had no idea. I thought they seemed the more likely to be friends than basically any other team.
Yeah. And incidentally, Colin and Christy are listed as life partners. Maybe that's like the now super woke way of saying husband and wife, but are they not married?
I think they're...
Because let me say for the record, if they're not married but have still just been together for 15 plus years, I'm so down with that. I think that is going to be genuinely like the wave of the future, is people recognizing there's no real need to get married necessarily. We love each other. We're going to be fine either way. And I'm hoping that that is the case with Colin and Christy.
Okay, but Nicole and Victor, it looks like, are engaged, but they're not life partners. So, gloomy skies on the horizon for them, I suppose.
I'm not saying being married is always bad. I'm just saying the idea of not getting married but just being together forever is gonna should and I think will become more popular.
All right, I'll take that to heart.
Yeah, good times, Dom. So what did you think of the Afghanimals?
They seem fine. I had no reference for them really from their first two seasons, but they seem cool. I know that the hardcore Amazing Race fans, the equivalent of the any season past Pearl Islands isn't official Survivor, like that kind of mentality. I know that the Afghanimals are very unpopular with that crowd, possibly based on what they did in their first two seasons, possibly based on those two seasons not being some of the first seasons. Unclear, but probably a little bit of both. But I found them pretty easy to root for, fairly inoffensive.
Yeah, I thought after the first two legs, they won the first two legs this season. And I was, of course, saying to myself, oh my God, this isn't even fair. The Afghanimals are going to just dominate every round. And then they really hit a rough patch for most of the middle of the season there, but managed to escape death every time and survive their, I think, third career U-turn. Apparently they hold all the records now for, you know, they'll be the first to tell you, they hold all the records now for like legs run and U-turns survived and roadblocks or whatever. But I did think they were interesting TV and a fun dynamic to have in the mix there. I think they were pretty distinct compared to the vibe between the two of them was pretty distinct compared to any of the other teams.
Right. And you would have no way of confirming or denying this, but it wouldn't shock me if this final three, and we can maybe extend that to final four. We can lump Nick and Vic in there too. But if this final three was the strongest that we've had in the Amazing Race, just Colin and Christy, Tyler and Corey, and then the Afghanimals, certainly those top two teams, historically great Amazing Races. You would put them up against any cast of any teams from across the show and expect them to do well and be in the mix. And then the Afghanimals seem to have pretty solid consistency, right? Fourth, and then third across their three seasons with surviving all those U-turns and other accolades that they've amassed along the way. So definitely strong in that department, at least.
When I found out, and you were going to be 0% surprised to hear this, Dom, when I found out that they finished fourth both of their first two times, of course, I was sitting here saying, do it to them. Take them out in fourth again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately, in fourth, we end up seeing Nicole and Victor go out after what I am agreeing with seems to be the general kind of takeaway that at least I've seen, a somewhat kind of like dirty pool, dirty Amazing Race move among the Amazing Race veteran teams here at Final Four to just gang up and do everything they can to make sure Nicole and Victor don't make the finale. What did you think of that?
Yeah, it was really bizarre, especially when that's the team that you want there with you racing for $1 million.
Right?
Right? Because that, especially when that team is basically just Victor versus every other person in the left in the race being a solid, amazing race all-star. Like, if you have a chance to hobble Colin and Christy, you take that chance. If you can handicap Tyler and Corey in any way, you leap at that opportunity. But just getting petty and vindictive towards Nicole and Victor, seemingly primarily because they're not an amazing race team, it's like you deserve to lose at that point. You deserve to be fourth once again instead of the two of them.
Right, exactly. It really did just seem like out of brand loyalty that these three teams wanted to work together just to like make sure that there was no possibility of a Big Brother or Survivor team sniping the title from the Amazing Race.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, to me, to go back to what you were saying, is pretty secondary to winning myself $1 million and not having to go up against one of these other teams in the finals.
You can find many creative ways to inflict misery on two other people with $1 million. You know, it doesn't take too much imagination.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm sure this was fun to get one over on them in the moment, but then when they go out and you go out next and you have to watch from that mat as Colin and Christy and then Tyler and Corey run in, at what point do you start to think, maybe there was another way out of this? Maybe we could have done this a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, I think you are at least partially underselling Nicole in a very unwoke way, Dom. You're officially canceled, where I thought Victor and Nicole worked fairly well together as a team for the most part. And yeah, there were plenty of times where the smarter move, and I think we saw this out of Colin and Christy as well a few times, is to have one person do the lion's share of the work in a given task, and the role for the other person is to just stay as out of the way as possible and make it as easy on the primary person. And they, I think, when that was called for, they knocked that out of the park for the most part. And Nicole very much was able to carry her weight in the challenges that made more sense as well. So I thought Victor and Nicole really stood out as...
Well, let me clarify then, because I don't want to be guilty of the thing we see so often in Survivor, where someone gets criticized for not doing their part in challenges, and then when they step up and try and do their part in challenges and it doesn't work, they then get yelled at for being bad at challenges. Like, that's not what I'm going for here. And I think it definitely is right to think about how you're going to strategically divvy up those tasks to heighten the performance of your team. But I mean more so that you heard a lot of talk about how Nick and Vic were such a good unit. They seemed so right for each other. They were so supportive. And a lot of that seemed to focus on Victor transforming from kind of this klutz that you saw in BB18 and then the challenge to being this great support system for Nicole. And I felt like that was a one-way street. You never really saw Nicole support Victor. And maybe Victor is like self-sufficient enough that you don't need that necessarily. But there was a lot of Victor cheering on Nicole from the sidelines, Nicole complaining about things, and then Victor having to just fill in the gaps himself at a later date.
That I agree with. That, I think, is just the fair takeaway from watching the TV episodes.
Yes, thank you. You watched the same TV show I did, so none of this, oh, well, I'm sure off camera they're very different. No, we are, we fully believe in the product. We're not going to believe anything else.
Yeah, so I thought Nicole and Victor overall were really impressive here. And just for the record, you did end up taking them with the way it went down. You took Colin and Christy first. I took Art and JJ and Tyler and Corey in the second round, or with my first set of picks. And then your second round of picks, you took Janelle and Brittany, actually, just ahead of Nicole and Victor.
Okay.
And I that's actually, I think, yeah, Still a semi-defensible pick. I think Janelle and Brittany were the team that, as far as I could tell, underperformed expectations the most, other than Art and JJ, obviously.
And also, barely got any screen time, too. I get the appeal of wanting all of the Big Brother hive or the BB fan base to flock in to support Janelle, but they really didn't have that much to support this season.
It's weird seeing Janelle be treated as a human instead of as a goddess.
Right. The thing is, I think there was a marked change in Janelle between BB6 and BB7 and then BB14, where in 14 she felt like she'd mellowed a lot. She was at this very different point in her life. She was a new mom at that point, missing her kids. And so she had changed a lot in that space of 5 or 6 years. And then it's been 6 years again since we last saw Janelle, and she seemed like basically the same as she was in 14. And yet, if you hadn't seen 14 or you'd airbrushed that out of your memory, it would seem like this drastic transformation.
You ready for this? Janelle was younger than you are now during Big Brother All-Stars.
I refuse to believe that.
that's a cold, hard fact for you today, Dom. So I guess, I mean, we don't necessarily need to take this in full order. Let's hit the Big Brother people, I guess, while we're on Nicole and Victor. That seems like a logical enough way to do it. And Janelle and Brittany have come up now. As I said, I thought that they were the other team from the Big Brother and Survivor community that had a chance to at least make a dent on this season, but we see them end up as the fourth team eliminated here. As you know, as you've been mentioning, we didn't see honestly that much of frankly either of them along the way, but any major takeaways as to like what went wrong for them? Did they appear to be a non-cohesive, uncohesive unit to you?
Incoherent. No, I think they seem perfectly fine. It's just the race didn't go their way, and that's going to happen sometimes, right? And it was encouraging to see when it was them and the Riley sisters competing for the last spot in that leg, just going out there together and being able to have that shared understanding now that they're at that point in their lives where they all have kids and they're all older and they have this solidarity almost, whereas you can imagine, like we saw on BB12, Rachel and Brittany really getting into it, or you can imagine if Janelle at that age had been in the house with Rachel or even with Brittany, there would have been no love lost between any of those combinations. So it's good in a way to just see the four of them have that camaraderie, I guess.
Yeah, and they're all moms now too. I think they bonded over that quite a bit, and I
literally just said that.
Sorry, I was just bloated. I was taken aback because you mentioned, and it had just legit not even crossed my mind over the course of this season, and I was wondering if there were any other pairings I had missed. I had forgotten that Rachel and Brittany were ever even on the same season.
Yeah, see, we covered 14 in the moment, and it's so easy to just because Brittany, to be fair, was a big part of that season.
12 is the season in question, but we did cover 14. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I've completely forgotten about most of 12, too, so co-sign all of that. Whatever your point happened to be.
I did remember that Janelle and Brittany were on the same season.
Well, that's a small mercy, yeah.
Yeah, I was sorry for repeating the mom's bit, but yeah, it did seem like they had quite a camaraderie that perhaps Corinne and Eliza were not necessarily included in.
Yeah, and no real sympathy for certainly Corinne and by extension Eliza around these parts.
Yeah, but let's, I think, quickly wrap up on the Big Brother crowd, and then we'll get back to the previous discussion with just quick parting thoughts on Rachel and Alyssa.
They grate on my nerves. I don't find their brand of drama that interesting, and especially between the two of them, it's just... I'm over it. I was glad to see them go, and it was almost weird seeing Alyssa back in some capacity, because Rachel feels like you know what you're getting with Rachel, and then Alyssa was always this weird Hugo to her Bart or vice versa again, where you can tell clearly they're in the same family, and yet it feels like only one of them should be able to exist, if that makes sense.
I was very over Alyssa for most of BB15. Did not need to have her back, but I am a huge Rachel Riley fan in small-ish doses. I am so happy with the idea of just having Rachel pop up for one season every few years. And Dom, I know one thing that gets talked about quite a bit is the CBS Triple Crown of reality TV appearances, someone appearing on all of Survivor, Big Brother, and The Amazing Race. And I think what better way to usher in the official Big Brother era of Survivor, now that we are so clearly at that point, than to literally put Rachel Riley on the show. I am non-ironically completely down with that.
I support the idea. I will not support the reality. I would much rather complete the trifecta by, let's say, putting Brett LaBelle on Big Brother or something, rather than to have to endure much more of Rachel Riley.
Victor could be in the mix there. And let me just clarify, in case anyone I understand we've had people from Big Brother play on Survivor before. I mean, Survivor has now become a game much the same way Big Brother is a game, i.e. not very much one.
Yeah. The thing that I really disliked the most about the Riley sisters was when Nicole and Victor thought they were getting eliminated, and then on the mat, Rachel and Alyssa just got into this dumb argument with them over what they supposedly said to another team and how it's actually all Nick and Vic's fault and so on. And it's like, just seriously, they think they're about to get eliminated from the race. They don't care about you defending your own reputation. Just let them have their moment. Take it, you know, let them have their time, and don't just harangue them on the mat as they're about to leave the race. I thought that was just like, if you're doing it to cause drama for TV, that would be one thing which I could almost get behind. But when it's just them being themselves and being incredibly irritating about it, like that rubbed me the wrong way.
I loved it when they did it to Corinne and Eliza. I thought that was that Corinne and Eliza had to get eliminated and then get yelled at by or get like pandered to by Rachel and Alyssa.
Yeah, that was their most endearing moment on the entire race, I thought.
That was so strong. But yeah, so overall, the Big Brother teams did substantially better than the Survivor teams. Do you have any Big Brother combos of people, Dom, that you think would be good to have on a future season of The Amazing Race? I know a lot of other people were in the casting mix that didn't make the final cut, but I am anticipating this being something that they potentially go back to.
Yeah, I could see this being a semi-regular thing where this is the trend now of having more and more returning players, but it's hard to take so many from the same franchise without causing fatigue or just running out of eligible people to bring back time and time again. So this is a rather ingenious way of getting around that conundrum, right? If you have returning players, but they're from other shows, right, that feels like you get the best of both worlds, or at least that's the theory.
And you bring in people like me and you who are going to now check out The Amazing Race who otherwise would not have. But I would say that the priority should be placed, especially if it's going to be Survivor and Big Brother people again racing against some of the best Amazing Race teams of all time, be looking more in the direction of the Jess and Cody's of the world who won a season of The Amazing Race, and less in the direction of the Ruperts.
Please do not look at all in the direction of the Jesses and Codys of the world.
I mean,
beg
physically
you.
And in no other capacity. I mean, I think it's a drastically different situation in terms of how excited I'm going to be for a potential reiteration of this if I see a list of teams that I think could actually be competitive versus more lambs being led to slaughter.
Okay.
Yeah. And you are completely right. In no other way should one ever look in the direction of Jess and Cody.
It is, especially when you see that Cody is still on his bullshit here in 2019. Like, if he had won his season of The Amazing Race, which it's unbelievably lucky for him that happened, and just faded away from the limelight, as his whole shtick was saying, I don't want to be this guy for TV, I'm just here doing my own thing, being authentic, whatever that's supposed to mean. If he had just done that, taken his $1 million and his fiancée-to-be, and then just went back to his life.
Fiancée-to-be, so girlfriend?
Yeah, okay, that was a weird way to phrase that. His life partner, I guess. If they had just went back into obscurity, I think people, even the ones who didn't like them during their season, would have mostly forgotten about them and been okay. And yet he's now back here being vocal about just being an incredibly shitty person. And it's just, it's aggravating to me. And this is why, honestly, I don't see myself ever getting back into Big Brother, because for as much as the game itself can be interesting, and for as much as the dynamics between the people can sometimes be interesting, all of that is tainted to me when the people are just so shitty to each other. And it's I just don't find it easy or compelling to watch anymore.
To once again date this podcast, the Big Brother live feeds have been on for less than a week, and I've already seen literally hundreds of tweets about like the toxic behavior going on in the house.
Yeah, the cancellation draft has already reached a resolution. So
I don't even know who had Jack, but someone's on the board.
Yeah, is it Jack or Jackson or both that have been canceled so far?
I think Jack has officially been canceled, and Jackson seems to be next on the horizon.
Okay. Well, maybe there's something in the water here with these Jacks that needs to be looked at. But
yeah, so Anyway, I very much in favor of avoiding the shittiest people that Big Brother casts, but if we can find some more competitive teams the next time around, I would be a lot more on board with that. Are you with me that you think this is something that is likely to come back again?
I think it definitely is, yeah. And it would be harder for any of the other shows to do a crossover episode, and I wonder if The Amazing Race, as like the forgotten child of that family, is almost begging the other franchises to get involved, whereas the like Survivor, let's say, would, they've had people from the race in the past, like most notably at least one time and hopefully two time Survivor winner Natalie Anderson in the mix, but it feels like a lot of that traffic is going one direction.
Yeah, Mike White, also a Amazing Race. I hope he called the meals that he cooked The Amazing Rice.
Sure.
On Survivor. All right. We're just going to move past that
It'll be good when it comes time for release. Don't worry.
Sure. So, Dom, let's, before we get to the Survivor teams, let's also hit on Team Fun here, our fifth place finishers. I was blown away, first of all, to find out that these two were not lifelong friends. Apparently, they met on their first season of The Amazing Race. I have no idea how that works, but that sounds cool.
Well, that's the same story as Team Fun, right?
That's what I'm saying. I'm talking about Team Fun.
Okay. You mentioned Tyler and Corey, and I thought you meant they met on
The Amazing Race,
which definitely wouldn't make any sense at all.
I don't think I mentioned Tyler and Corey.
I might just not have been listening to you.
I think
whatsoever.
I explicitly said Team Fun.
I may just be hallucinating. That's definitely in the mix. Either way, that's back to tournament. I think, yeah, Team Fun, I liked them. I didn't like Team Fun as a shtick, though. I think just by themselves, they seem like cool people, easy to root for. But the whole Team Fun performance aspect was not really for me.
Yeah, that's really well put. And at a certain point, I wondered how much of that was just doing it for the camera. And I don't know the origin story of Team Fun. Like, maybe they showed up on the race and they were told to bond over some aspect of their personalities, and that's what they landed on, and that's been their thing since the beginning, and I'm guessing it's something close to that. But by at least the midpoint of this race, I was wondering just how excited they were to be showing up as Team Fun every single day.
The whole Team Fun label is so anodyne as well, right? Like, it reads like something from a dating profile. It's like, well, we're fun, you like fun, right? I'm fun, let's have some fun, you know? It's just, it's like, can you really not be any more specific than that, please?
Yeah. I think both of them seemed totally cool and likable as individuals, but I was like you, over the Team Fun kind of shtick relatively quickly, although I found myself still continuing to be like rooting for them in the race, because as advertised, I thought they were the people often bringing the kind of more fun vibe to a given episode that was otherwise full of people arguing with each other or within their own teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there goes Team Fun in fifth place. Let's get into the Survivor teams. Or actually, before we do that, I guess we should also touch on Art and JJ, our last place finishers here. And it turns out, Dom, that running the Amazing Race at age like 41 or whatever is a bit of a different ballgame than running it at 50.
Sure. I was going to say tell that to Colin and Chrissy, but if they come back at 50, we'll see how much truth that maxim really has.
Yeah, they went from like 25 to 38 or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, so, but Art and JJ, I mean, as we referenced before, and the reason, I mean, I took them with my first overall pick, is they were absolute beasts their first season. They ran against Rachel and Major Dave, and it seemed like every single week those two teams were finishing in some order in the top two, and then it just came down to them getting unlucky with one of the legs in the finale. Otherwise, they would have been right there. I think they went into that leg like in the lead and then just blew it. But obviously a different story this time around, and I did not do the math on just what a difference 6 to 8 years would make, but super disappointing, I thought, to have Art and JJ end up going out first overall here, and it may have even delayed that narrative of this whole thing being such a foregone conclusion that the Amazing Racers would just stomp everyone.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia page for season 20 now, and you look at Arden JJ's record across the race. It's third, second, first, second, third, fourth, second. So they only dip below third for one brief moment, and yet somehow that is not even close to being the most impressive record by a team on the season, because Rachel and Dave, who end up pipping them to the post, theirs is first, sixth, second, fourth, first, second, first, which wow. Maybe that's like a Simon-esque run on the race. It's just truly incredible.
Yeah, and incidentally, I saw a fun piece of trivia. I believe the person to credit with this is Peridium, that Colin and Christy, over both of their seasons, have never finished outside the top four in a leg.
Yeah, so that's a really impressive stat too. So Rachel and Dave haven't come back, right? There hasn't been some all-stars that featured them.
Not that I am aware of. But if it had happened, I probably still would not have been aware of it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
It's like, has temperature increased on Mars in the last 5 years? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that now that you mention it, that was a stupid question. Forget I ever asked.
Yeah, anyway, so Art and JJ definitely ran a little bit below expectation, I would say, this time around. They were probably, in general, a stronger team still than a couple of these others, but I don't remember which one it was. It seemed like one of them had a pretty bad injury once they got to that final challenge in the first leg, and that was going to be the end of that. So let's get into the survivor teams, Dom, and let's start with the team that ended up doing the best out of the entire survivor crew, friend of the podcast, Chris Hammonds, and his buddy Brett LaBelle. What did you think of seeing Chris and Brett in action, a duo that people had been talking about ever since their time on Millennials versus Gen X, as, oh, you guys should have your own podcast, your own TV show? Here they are, Chris and Brett, the bromance.
Yeah, I like them. I was glad to see them back. I don't know if that packaged bromance really made much sense to the Amazing Race viewers who don't watch Survivor. You just see these guys come in and they're selling themselves as this massive bromance, and they just seem like two guys who are good buddies, right? There's no above and beyond aspect to that.
Yeah, I would agree that if I were an Amazing Race viewer, I would potentially be a bit confused about what was going on. But I don't know how much beyond the surface there really even is to understand about the dynamic between Chris and Brett.
Especially as they're just listed as friends, and they haven't earned the mantle of best friends.
That's right. But it seems like any casual Amazing Race viewer who doesn't watch Survivor could pretty quickly put them into roughly the correct camp of these guys seem like longtime drinking buddies.
With the emphasis on the drinking. Yeah.
For sure. So I thought they were fun. They obviously got bailed out early on with the non-elimination leg. But that, you know, that's going to happen to plenty of teams along the way. So glad that they could capitalize there. And yeah, so any other thoughts on Chris and Brett?
No, I'm sure they're going to be angling for some appearance on something else, and I'll be glad to see them wherever they end up.
Sure. So let's then move down to Corinne and Eliza. You know, we've had some words about Corinne and Eliza over the years, but I genuinely was excited to see them show up on The Amazing Race for sure.
I was excited to see Corinne get lost in some foreign country and have all of the locals be incredibly unhelpful to her.
I mean, I remember nailed the call in the preseason podcast we did in saying something to the effect of like, I don't see Corinne and Eliza leading many legs, but I do see them leading the race in managers demanded to be spoken to and cab drivers yelled at, which I think was pretty accurate.
I feel like that came to fruition. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they were gone relatively early, but had another big highlight in the finale with their reaction shots to people crossing the finish line, really putting the finishing touches on the Corinne and Eliza brand there.
yeah, Corinne adding like she'd rather be literally anywhere else, and Eliza adding like this is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to her.
Yeah, so a lot of fun with Corinne and Eliza, who I think, you know, went out there knowing exactly why they were being put out there. I can't imagine they thought they had much of a chance of actually winning. They probably thought they could go a lot further than third team out or whatever. And in their defense, they probably could have, although I don't see them being in there in the finale too often. But they understand why they have always been put on reality TV, and they certainly delivered this time as well.
Yeah, and did you feel like Eliza was making this very conscious effort to ham up her own attitude, if you liked, so that she could keep up with Corinne? Because there was definitely a point where Eliza and Corinne would have been peas from apart in that sense. And yet, it does seem like Eliza has mellowed. She's changed, and I mean, if you go on her Twitter, she's definitely fired up about politics and real life stuff correctly, and she's become a good advocate for all of that. But personality wise, it felt like she had to really get into the character in order to be part of this Eliza and Corinne duo.
I'm imagining it's a lot like riding a bike, especially when you're surrounded by Rachel and Alyssa.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also had Rupert and Laura, the team that ultimately went undrafted in our draft. Sorry, Dan Liebke, this one not going to work out, but they at least managed to survive one leg after the miracle bailout when either Art or JJ ended up getting hurt. And I don't think anyone had major expectations out of them as like performers on the race. I think they were put on here because Rupert is still insanely recognizable to the casual Survivor fan, and this was going to air right after Survivor, so we of course would be morons not to put Rupert on.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to having Rupert on every reality TV season as background furniture to draw people in, and you can play this game of Where's Rupert, where you go to this, you go to that crowded market in London, and Rupert in his tie-dyes in his sunbed, and let's see if you can spot him in the background. You know, I'm down for all of that. I just don't need to see him competing in the main event, which he's not going to be competing in for very long, as it turns out.
I think I'm willing to say on the record, I forget who I was talking about this with on some relatively recent podcast, but just the idea of Rupert someday taking over for Jeff Probst as the host of Survivor. If that happens, I think I can comfortably say I'm out. I'm not here. I'm not going to watch Survivor hosted by Rupert.
I kind of want to see that commitment tested, but at the same time, I really, really don't. So let's keep it as it is for now, please.
Yeah. All right. So that, I believe, wraps us on all of the teams, at least in passing. Dom, any other just general takeaways from The Amazing Race? Are you going to watch the next season of The Amazing Race?
I'm not going to promise anything. Let's check back in a few weeks into that season and see where I'm at. But I have a question that I've been asking a lot recently, mostly to puzzled looks and furrowed brows, but maybe you'll have a different take on this situation. Do you get Hot Priest vibes from Phil Cohen?
Completely. No question
yes,
about it.
Thank you. They are dead ringers for each other, right?
Yeah. I mean, Andrew Scott's like 25 years younger, 20 years younger, but absolutely, for sure.
So Phil Cohen doesn't have that Jeff Probst, Judy Chen, Moonfest quality of never aging, or does he?
They all age. So all three of the people you've listed have aged 6.5 years in the last 20 years.
All right, so it's like reverse dog years, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Reality TV hosts age 1 year every 3 years.
Sure.
Yeah, that's how it works. And I'm trying to not bring up Andrew Scott's accent because I know you find that fascinating, like my fascination with it fascinating, but we don't need to go down that rabbit hole, Dom. No, we've been here long enough.
We can touch in on that because the few messages that you sent me recently that wasn't a very transactional when are we recording this podcast message was to comment on Andrew Scott having a funny accent, which baffled me because firstly, you were talking to me, which was nice and refreshing, but also he has a perfectly standard Irish accent. There is nothing remarkable about his accent to anyone who is from Ireland.
So how often do you feel like I am hearing authentic Irish accents?
Not as often as you should be, it seems.
Yeah, to me, he sounds like a super Northern England guy with just like the most exaggerated, weird British accent rather than an entirely separate country. But I also think he's at an unfair disadvantage because of his role on Sherlock and the voice that he put on for that really sticking with me. I think that is more the weird accent that I associate with him.
So for that task in London in the finale, did all the British people just sound identical to you or identical to me or what?
I loved all the different cabbies' accents. They had the perfect cabbie voices.
Yeah, and the perfect British cabbie disdain for everyone around them as well.
So we mentioned this actually in passing, but this would be just kind of a fun thing to put out there at the end of a podcast that ties in 0% to anything to do with reality TV. But that final challenge, as they said on the show, but really didn't get into nearly the specifics of enough as far as I was concerned, is memorizing all the roads and landmarks and stuff in London. To become a cabbie in London, they had that guy list off like 100, you have to know 100,000 streets and 25,000 landmarks and whatever, but you hear those numbers in passing without really thinking about what goes into that. Dom, you are much more familiar than I am with something called the knowledge, this quiz or this intense test, rather, that every aspiring cabbie in London has to pass. Can you get into what goes into prepping for that?
So it's basically an expanded version of what they describe in the show. And there is, I think there are several documentaries about this, which I guess we could end up covering at one point.
I would love to. I was going to ask if there were any.
There's one from the BBC from like 1996 or something. So a very different vibe from a lot of the slick, fast-paced documentaries that we end up watching and reviewing. But it is just that. It's putting the work in. It's driving around all of these like labyrinthine streets for hours and hours on end for 2.5 years in a lot of cases, just memorizing everything, taking the same routes. And you have to come up with this entire system for internalizing all of this knowledge, because there is so much of it that it is just impossible to do otherwise. It's if you listen to our SOM podcast and watch that, you'll remember that there was so much information that they all had to absorb that it was overwhelming, even for the ones who had good memories and had a good system for breaking it down. And it's basically the same for the knowledge. The major difference being that with directions or stuff like that, you can internalize that by doing a lot of the time. So the way they prepare is they just do it. They just drive around London for years on end every single day until it's firmly hammered into their brains. And even then, it's a big task.
I remember a few years ago, I won a proposition bet after Ian Terry eventually bought out because the endeavor was not worth the prize that he would have gotten, where he was supposed to memorize and correctly label every county in the entire United States. And there were, it turns out, about 3,000 or so counties to memorize. And that is by itself just a preposterous undertaking for anyone. The knowledge is close to 100 times that difficult.
Yeah, it is orders of magnitude more difficult than that.
Yeah, I mean, powers of 10.
Yeah, and I stand by my claim that Ian could have nailed that if he wanted to and had the commitment, which he didn't. He chickened out. But I still think that was doable. But this is on the borderline of what is doable for anybody, basically. And it seems incredibly anachronistic in the age of the GPS, right? Well, I guess you still want your cabbie to know what to do if the GPS breaks down or leads you astray or whatever. But the fact that you have this tiny device that contains, I guess, all human knowledge, I guess, obsoleted by your phone nowadays, but that's by the by. The fact that you have this thing which tells you where to go and which you can follow, the fact that you still need to have all of this info down on paper, if you like, memorize it, it feels like a relic of the past. And yet that's part of what makes it so appealing and part of what makes it, I think, such good material for this amazing race task where it feels like you are stepping into a different universe.
Yeah, and just to quickly clarify, the task for Ian was he had to label every county in the United States correctly with zero errors, and I agree. He could absolutely do that. I was not betting that he was unable to do that. I was betting that he would not be willing to do that for money as low as $500.
Correct.
And that was correct. And he eventually said, I think I could do it, but this is not even close to worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Don, there we have it. The Amazing Race 31 is in the books. A very solid time, I'm going to say, overall. And I entered this podcast as someone not really planning on watching the next season of The Amazing Race, but I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to at least not cancel my DVR recording. And hopefully find some teams in there that I like. And if not, hey, I'm sure relatively soon there's going to be another season with Survivor and Big Brother people.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Anything else that we need to touch on?
I think that just about covers it. It's tempting to just find any miscellaneous takes I have about the previous 30 seasons of The Amazing Race and just jam them all in here, but I really don't have any of those either. So
who's
your
favorite Amazing Race team of all time?
I'm going to sound like such a casual with recency bias, but it's probably going to be just one of the few teams I actually remember. it's not going to be a good one, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I asked that question and then realized I can't come up with a single answer of my own, so I'm sorry to all the listeners that neither of us has an answer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that will do it. What a thrilling way to finish the Amazing Race podcast. A really, really climactic stuff there. Dom is on Twitter, of course, at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email the show, DomandColin@gmail.com. And who knows when we'll be back here talking the Amazing Race again, but it may potentially be sooner than any of us think at this point. So that is going to wrap us up today. Thank you guys for making it this far. We will talk to you whenever we talk to you next. Take care, everybody.